Greetings, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Wandering One podcast, brought to you by Wandering One Studios and me, your host, Link Flores. How are you doing? It is Wednesday, September 17th, 2025, and thank you again to everybody who's been listening. I appreciate you, and I appreciate you sharing it with friends, family, whomever. It does help the podcast grow. Also, rating and reviewing it wherever you see it is definitely helpful as well. So thank you very much. If you want to hear your comments and questions, whatever, read on the air, please feel free to stop over to patreon.com/wanderingonestudios, where it costs you $0 and 0 cents to follow along for free. And by so doing, you have access to some free content on the Patreon. It's not just paid stuff over there, I promise. As well as, like I said, direct access to be able to email me your comments, questions, and whatnot. So I can read them there on the podcast. And again, as always, confidentiality is guaranteed unless you specifically ask me to mention you for whatever reason. Yeah, so there is that. I won't read your name on the air, so don't have to worry about that. So go over there, say something, and let me know what you think about the podcast. Let me know what you think about anything we talk about during the show. And also check me out over on Twitch. I'm back to streaming again. Twitch.tv/LinkIB. Currently playing through a couple different games at once, it feels like. Still messing around with Destiny 2's Edge of Fate DLC. Just recently was gifted Borderlands 4 by a mysterious benefactor and patron saint of the stream. Appreciate you out there, bro. Thank you very much. And yeah, we're going to be heading back to Baldur's Gate, so eventually I'll finish this fucking game. On my own solo playthrough, anyway. I've already beaten it once with friends, and it just, I don't know, after that, it just kind of fell off. We'll get to it. We'll talk about it. But you'll definitely get to see it over on twitch.tv/linkIB. I'm thinking I'm going to put Baldur's Gate into like my Wednesday and Saturday slots after this week. This week has been kind of bananas, so I'm just going to jump right into some whatever I feel like. Let's put it that way. I haven't really decided, but stick around and make sure you check me out. I'm going to start trying to push those streams up a little closer to 1 in the afternoon. so I have a little bit more time during the evening if I need to make dinner, if we have friends over or whatever. And yeah, we're going to push for earlier start times during the weekdays. So keep an eye out for that over on Blue Sky. You can check me out there. It's the letter W, the number 1, the word studios.bsky.social. And there you can find links to some of my other stuff as well as my Blue Sky for my Twitch page. And you can check me out over there. And I'll put up some more information about what I'm going to be doing, what I'm getting into. And hopefully, if I get my head out of my ass, I'll have my list up for the commission rules and the pricing in like basically broad strokes pricing. So it's not going to be one size fits all, but it will give you like an idea, a guideline of what you could be looking forward to if you order some art commissions from me. Speaking of which, I have to get one of these things scanned. So this podcast may go a little shorter than usual. We'll see how it all shakes out. But we're going to work on that. I have a commission already in the can. I just need to get it scanned so I can get it over to digital so I can clean the lines up and send it out to the client. And that'll be my first one in probably over a decade, I think. It's been a very long time since I drawn something for somebody else for money dollars. So it's going to be cool. I think it's going to be fun to get into some of these commissions. There are going to be some rules, certain things I will and won't do, and your expectations that you can have of me as your artist. So, yeah, keep your eyes posted to the Blue Sky for that. And with no further ado, let's get into this weekend news. Let's start off with some media stuff, man. Like I said, this thing kind of goes all over the place. I just got notes about stuff I want to, like points I want to hit, but it's going to bounce around. So some of you may remember me and my buddy and neighbor, Derek, we go and check out movies, try to do that like once a week. Just a good time for us to get together, hang out, maybe shoot the shit for a little bit, watch a movie, enjoy one another's company. And this week we got to go and see the Kimetsu no Yaiba Demon Slayer movie, Infinity Castle. Man, what a ride. That movie is quite a ride. And we're going to go with a no spoiler review here, more of like my impressions of the film, because I don't want to give away major plot points or anything like that or screw anything up for anybody. But I will let you know this. You do need to go back. If you haven't watched the previous seasons of Demon Slayer, you need to go back and you need to watch them. And most particularly, you need to watch the last arc that was put out. I think if you're watching on Netflix, I think it's called season five. Some places it's like four and five are kind of collected together. It's weird. The way they've chopped this series up. It might be one of the more convoluted ways to put out a series that I've ever seen in my that I've seen in my life. And it's good. It's good. The animation's solid. The storylines are fun without getting overly burdened by, serious material. They do drop in some humor, a little bit of romance along the way. So if you're caught up on the series, it picks up directly at the end of season four, season five, however you saw it. Yeah, and it pretty much hits the gas and goes from like 0 to 100 in the first maybe 5 minutes of the film. You're just off to the races. It's just go time. It's the same kinetic action you've come to love and expect from the animated series, just put into movie form. And I will let you know this, if you haven't looked at the runtime already, bring a snack and have a good nap and go to the bathroom before you go, like twice. This is a long movie. And I'm not saying that because it's bad, but once you've been in it for a while, you start to realize this took a lot longer than I expected. So yeah, you definitely want to make sure that you have, don't eat before this thing. If you're gonna have a snack or something like that, make it light during the movie, like near the end, like middle of end or whatever. Just know that it's a long movie. Know that it's definitely worth it. The action is absolutely incredible. The animation, like I said, the animation still holds up to the standard of the show, and in some places, it's even outshines the show, which if you've watched it, you'll know that's a tall order to fill. But we had a great time and thoroughly enjoyed it. And I will say this for the movie-going experience, really got to work on getting like a Stanley Steamer into everybody's theaters like once a week or something. Because, oh my God, do theater seats smell like ash. I mean, I know that people's butts go in them, but it's like they don't spray them down, wipe them down with nothing. You know, not every theater is playing at every showing. You know what I mean? They usually have like a break in between. You probably give them people like get a good dedicated cleaning crew and be like, hey, every like, 2 hours or whatever, we're gonna have a whole crew go in and clean up these three cinemas. And then after that, 2 hours later, you're gonna go and you're gonna be like, we're gonna do like an hour in each one of these things. And like, 3 hours, like, give them like 3 hour breaks. You're gonna have like a 6 hour shift. You have 8 hour shift, and for 3 hours, you're just gonna be kind of hanging out. You know what I mean? You do like stuff like, sweeping them around the lobby, checking on the bathrooms. But then a 1 hour, you are each gonna be sent to a theater to clean the shit out of it. Cause wow, when I left the theater, I was like, this, ugh, I carried it with me. I'm like, this is disgusting. I gotta wash all these clothes. But I was fine when I walked into the lobby. And then as soon as we walked into the theater, I'm like, ooh, it smells like somebody let their dogs run through here. Wet. Like, this doesn't feel great at all. And the further we went up, the smell didn't quite travel up because, they keep theaters really nice and cold. But man, did it smell like wet dog in that theater. I was like, oh, Jesus, man, this isn't, please help. Please to help. This doesn't feel good at all. Oh, look at that. Yeah, so, but outside of that, the movie was excellent. It is a very long movie. Don't just jump up out of your seats. Like, we saw a bunch of people that were there who, there's no, like, after credits scene like you would think for a Marvel movie. Which I think Marvel has kind of spoiled us in that regard. Like, hey, stick around until the very, very end for a little tidbit from something else. And that was the only thing I think that probably bugged me about the Superman film was that I stuck around only to watch basically a live version of an old comic book cover, which was nice. Don't get me wrong. It was nice to see that, but I was like, that was it. There was nothing really more than that. Neat. Thank you. But yeah, there's no after credit scene. Once you, as long as you stick through the trailing credits, you're going to catch little bits of story and little snippets of what's to come. And this is not really a spoiler because this news and information is out there. I just wasn't privy to it up until yesterday. There will be no new season, so there won't be more animated episodes coming out. Instead, they tend to wrap up this story with two more films, which will be spread out over the next, wait for it, 4 years. 4 freaking years to find out what happens to the end of this story. I'm like, dude, just animate the episodes. I would much rather you close it off with the movie. If you're going to wait, make us wait 4 years, fine. Make us wait 4 years for the final arc of the film to come out as like another 2.5 to 2 hour and 45 minute extravaganza to wrap it all together. But in between, give us like, you know, 3 or 4 seasons to kind of flesh out the story. But I will say this without spoiling anything. There are some beats that happened in the movie that felt like they were too kind of shoehorned in to an extent and would have been better served. Now, not that they weren't well done, but they would have been better served if they had been fleshed out over, let's say, even like 4 to 5 episodes. Something, a shorter kind of arc within an arc. And even you didn't have to go that long. You could have done it in 2 to 3 episodes for what was being put out, right? And you could just, you know, if you wanted to stretch it to 3 episodes, you have this arc that's between, you know, X character and Y character, maybe even Z character. You kind of interact with them, get to know a little bit more about their stories, their motivations, and how they all came to this point. But then you intersperse in those episodes like a meanwhile, you know, at the Neil Deckel thing, like meanwhile at the Hall of Justice, and you just click over for like maybe like 4 or 5 minutes to this is what's happening on the, you know, on the other teams, whatever, as this whole story arc is going on. So we never really get too overwhelmed with the story from any one angle. We get a little bit of, ancillary story that feeds into maybe some of the motivations of what's happening in the main, quote unquote, main arc that we're watching. And just provides a little bit of extra motivation for people to stay invested and to not just kind of like drop off. Because that's one thing I found that happens a lot when an anime switches over and starts doing OVAs as opposed to running episodes. You start to lose track of what movie goes where, and then people just stop giving a shit. Like, I think that's what happened to me. When I started watching Naruto Shippuden as, like, an animated series, I was in from start to finish, and I even caught some of the movies in between. I was like, this is great. And then they're like, we still got some other shit coming out. Then we have, you know, Naruto is Boruto. And I'm like, all right. It wasn't really as interesting to me. But then, like I said, I started knowing there were movies from the Naruto universe, and I was like, where do these fit? How do these all mesh together? Excuse me. That caught me off guard. How do they all mesh together? Because at some point, you know, you have to have like a timeline, basically, like they've done with Marvel movies. This is the order in which you have to watch these for everything to make sense. And I feel like some of these movies don't make sense at all. That's my personally think, like, if you're going to make a series like Demon Slayer, right? You can throw those, you know, those original films in there, and you could probably even bookend the series with them, right? Maybe you don't start out with one, but you go like, hey, we run the first season, then we do like maybe an hour, you know, a 90-minute movie, then we do seasons 2 and 3, and then we do like another, you know, hour and a half to 2 hour movie, then we go to seasons 4 and 5, and then we're like, all right, then we do another one, or we do like 3 seasons in a row. I'd prefer it for like 3 or 4 seasons in a row, but it's a very short series from what we can see. I could see like maybe instead of making 2 big-ass movies, make like 2 smaller seasons in between a decent bookend kind of film, you know? Anyway, all that, I've been rambling on a little bit about like the nature of animation production. And to be honest, I don't really have a clue as to how... I have an idea, but I don't have a real thorough understanding of how the animation process works. And also how animation studios are run in various countries, you know, America versus Japan versus Korea versus France versus whatever. So there's probably, there's assuredly way more layers to this cake than I can see when I, before I start cutting into it. But I'm saying this is just my thoughts of, you know, instead of making two final movies and calling it quits, this would give the series a little bit more legs. It would also enable you to embellish some of the stories a little bit more, engage the fans on a deeper level. And just give us give us a reason to come back to the well. Yeah, and it's not that we wouldn't come back. It's just, it keeps you invested. You know what I mean? Anyway, just my thoughts about that. Oh my gosh, there was something else that came out recently. What was that? Because I will talk about the foosball. I will talk about the food. Oh, you know what it was? Oh gosh, it was the fights on Netflix. Some of you may be boxing fans. Some of you probably not. And I think a lot of us have been kind of disappointed is a gentle way of putting it with Netflix's new live fights being streamed kind of thing. And it really is the fault of the whole promotion of the Jake Paul Mike Tyson fight, because that thing really. That really shit the bed for a lot of people. But it was cool that I got to see fighters that I probably wouldn't have ever known about or recognized. Now, the main fight for this card was Terrence Crawford, who at the time of the fight was 42-0 with 31 knockouts, fighting Canelo Alvarez, who is 62-3-2. So yeah, that's 62 wins, 3 losses, and 2 draws with 39 KOs. That was a unanimous decision bout. We'll get into that in a little bit. Sorry. But, the fights I did get to watch were Christian Mbili, I think is how you pronounce the gentleman's name, versus Lester Martinez. So that was a interim super middleweight championship fight. And they ran this thing out to a draw. And the fun thing about that fight in particular was that I didn't really see, and like this was one of the reasons why it became a draw, right? I couldn't really see any way that like either fighter really overtook the other at any point during the match, right? Like during this bout, you're like, okay, they seem pretty evenly matched. Just to get a look at their records, and Billy's record was 29-0-1 with 24 knockouts. Martinez's was 19-0-1 with 16 knockouts. And it really just came down to a 10-round, it was a slugfest. I mean, they're not as active and engaged as as the last two fights that I got to see, but they were really, you know, they were given as good as they got. And like I said, the judges was like, hey, it's a draw. We thought it was going to be this, and it was actually not that, but it was pretty dope. So that was really a solid fight. You would have loved to see one of them come out on top. They both looked kind of shocked that it went to the cards and it became a draw. But, I mean, hey, at that point, you kind of both won, right? Like, you can look at it negatively and be like, well, neither one of them won. Yeah, I think they kind of both won. Like, we're so good, we're drawn into a stalemate. Like, that's pretty impressive, especially in the fight game. You know, you're like, hey, you guys were just so good, you got to kind of... If you were going to have a knockout, it would have been like a double KO. They would have both hit each other in the jaw at the same time and both gone out. But yeah, it was a great fight. Now, the next fight on the card that I saw it near the end, was Callum Walsh versus Fernando Vargas Jr. Now, Callum Walsh is a pretty new fighter from what I understand. His record stands at 15-0 with 11 knockouts, but he remained unbeaten. And against Fernando Vargas Jr., who was 17-1 with 15 knockouts after 10 rounds, that fight came to a decision for Callum Walsh. And I got to say something about like the fight game, right? I've trained martial arts and I've watched numerous fights over the years, not just fist fights, but I mean actual like, you know, like licensed bouts. I've never seen... in person anyway, someone who is more of a showboat and kind of a dirty fighter than I saw in Fernando Vargas Jr. And in my personal opinion, I mean, because they said his father was a boxer. Like, I never really followed boxing as much. But they said his father was like a champion boxer. I think he embarrassed his family. There's a lot of like when they went to go and, you know, tap gloves at the beginning of the match, he actually swung underneath Walsh's belt, like actually take a nut shot at him. Because he's a little shorter than Walsh, but he basically went for like a sack tap on him. And I'm like, that didn't sit well with me at all. And then when they actually started the fight, he was swinging really low below the belt. He actually got called by the referee for it multiple times, which if I'm the referee and I see you do this more than like three times, I'm going to fucking, not only am I going to have him deduct points or whatever, if I see it like three things, because sometimes you could get a wild swing. Sometimes a boxer will stand up on you. You don't expect him to. You catch him somewhere. But he was taking like wide shots, like trying to swing around his back. If I see enough of that, I'm going to disqualify you. There's just, you could end up, I mean, boxing is about basically hurting each other, right? But you could damage somebody's genitalia. You know what I mean? If you're swinging around somebody's back, you could dislocate a rib. You know what I mean? There's a lot of shit that can go wrong if you have an undisciplined and uncontrolled fighter on your hands. And that's what I saw out of Vargas. While he's got, you know, obviously he's got some fights under his belt, he just seemed to be more wild and more prone to playing dirty tricks, to the point where even Walsh was looking at him, like smiling at him, like, you know what you did there. You're not slick. Like, and the ref isn't calling it, but you know what the fuck you just did. So that was really messed up. I was kind of not thrilled about that. So I was actually glad that the fight went to Walsh, because it felt like Vargas was just, yeah, I guess he was underhanded, no pun intended, with those low shots, and just generally seemed like an all-around kind of like a spoiled little fighter. Like he's he was standing on daddy's pedigree. And that really, that kind of like boxing nepotism is a weird thing. But that nepotism of any shade like really irritates me. And then you get down to the Canelo Crawford fight. Like I said, Crawford being the champ and Alvarez the challenger. It came down to a decision after 12 rounds. But I'll tell you this, from the start, Crawford, Terrence Bud Crawford, they called him. I love that, Bud. But he was just dominating the ring. He was a little cocksure. I think at some points he was like, you know, drop his hands down, kind of act a little bit, little cavalier. But he wasn't necessarily taunting. He just was like, I'm going to conserve some of my energy. And I noticed Callum Walsh did the same thing too. Like, you know, these guys who can like go the distance, they're keeping their arms and their shoulders loose. And then they might not have their guard up at every second of the fight, but you know they've gauged the range of their opponent to enough of a degree that they're not taking a whole lot of big shots to the dome or, you know, with their, you know, chest or stomach or ribs unguarded. So they're close enough that they can snap the hands back up if they need to, but they can allow their arms to rest and to breathe a little bit. And Crawford showed off a wide array of punching skill. And just a lot of, I think for him, it was a lot of poise and a knowledge of his opponent. Because from what I could understand, Alvarez is he's a knockout artist. Like, he just puts people to sleep. And it's clear by Crawford's record that he does the same thing as well. So you got two dudes in the ring who have a giant amount of respect for the punching power of the other one. And you could just see just in Canelo Alvarez's back, like his lats are so widespread that he just swings from the waist, you know? It wasn't a lot of like, you know, jabbing on his part, but like he had that look of like he had the back of somebody like Mike Tyson back when Mike was in his prime. This broad, like wide back, like a cobra. And you just know if he starts swinging from the waist and just a good enough hook or a good enough uppercut is going to put somebody to sleep. And I think Crawford recognized that and respected it. Alvarez also recognized and respected that Crawford has like a long reach and a quick jab. But he's just as quick of a counterpuncher as anybody else out in the game, I guess, because there were a couple times he caught Alvarez in the mouth, and they each got a couple of good shots where the crowd reacted viscerally. And so did we. We were like, ooh. But there's a couple times where Crawford made Alvarez almost eat his mouth guard. He turned his head around sideways. I'm like, anybody else, that's a knockout. You know what I mean? I know that they were fighting in like a super middleweight division, but I mean, you catch anybody their size and smaller with that shot out in the world, you're putting them out. That's their reset button right there. They're going to wake up and be like, what day is it? But, and like I said, for all the stuff that Netflix had done wrong with the previous fights, or especially with those, go with the Paul Tyson fight. Tyson-Paul fight. Yeah, everything they did wrong, they started to slowly have course-corrected a little bit more. I don't really care for the ads during the fights. Like, if you're going to play ads on Netflix, play ads of, like, your other Netflix shows. Give us another reason to come back to Netflix. I don't need to see commercials for Tide. I already know where to buy soap. You know what I mean? Like, this is a perfect opportunity, and it was a dumb opportunity on Netflix's part. I know the reason they did it was to, like, you know, add more. You have your advertisers in there. You generate more revenue. Even if the card doesn't sell out as well as you hope in live, then, like, you make your money back on getting, you know, advertising revenue from having eyes on the fight itself from at home, which is where most people are going to end up watching it. But, yeah, it was really kind of annoying. Like, or at least make it something that's a little bit more, you know, related to whatever you have, you know, on your docket. But, you know, that said, I think it was overall a pretty damn good fight. I enjoyed watching it. And, you know, if they continue to get better, like I said, some of the cards have been really, really solid. As they continue to get better, I'm going to be more invested in them. Yeah, that's what I'm hoping for. So I wasn't really too sad about that. You know what I am also not too sad about is Borderlands 4. You guys know I do a lot of video gaming. Let's just put it this way. I do a lot of video game streaming. I should do more gaming. And I think when I'm able to pull in more commissions or at least some kind of art or acting related jobs, I will feel more comfortable in the ability to sit and play games for enjoyment as opposed to just on stream where it's more like work, I guess. But I didn't get, like I said, the homie gave me a copy of Borderlands 4 as a gift. And I was like, yes, sir. Thank you very much. And after some, you know, initial finagling, trying to adjust some of the settings for Borderlands, if you're not familiar with the franchise, go back and look at the first one. The look has pretty much remained largely unchanged, although it has become more refined in the recent iterations of the franchise. It's a cel-shaded first-person shooter, what they call a looter shooter, where you're basically collecting lots of, you know, guns and shields and other gobbledygook to, you know, equip your characters with and to just basically pour as many bullets into opposing forces as possible in the hopes of getting more cooler, gooder, shinier stuff. And, I mean, it's a formula that's worked for years and it's worked out really well for 2K and Gearbox. And I'm really excited. As I was like, this looks really cool. I just want to see what it's going to be about. The story looks as outlandish as any other Borderlands game you've ever seen or played or heard of. Of course, you have the four main characters that you can pick from, and the story's shown through their lens. You get little bits of the personality through the voice acting. I haven't played enough of it to know if you're going to learn more about each character's individual journey by playing, which is one of the things I think that a lot of game studios don't really do very often. And it's got to be difficult, especially when you consider trying to write narratives for four different characters. Giving them little story beats is one thing. Fleshing out the entirety of a character's story over the course of a campaign the size of a Borderlands 4, quite another. Generally speaking, like some of these looter shooter games on the larger end, even as a singular insular game, can end up to be like, you know, 40 plus hour affairs. So imagine, you have to really want to hear the story of each character to play it through four different times, you know, and put close to 160 to maybe even 200 hours or more into the game, you know, to unlock all the secrets, hear all the story beats, get the emotional interplay between the characters and, you know, the NPCs in the world or whoever is in their stories, yada, yada, yada. But overall, enjoying it immensely. It is on normal difficulty for me, so I didn't pick the hardest difficulty, and it's still tough as nails. You're gonna die a lot. Even if you're really good at first-person shooters, like, just the way the waves of enemies they throw at you, some of the more unprecedented enemies that had, like, dual and triple shielding, like, I have a shield I have to cut through, then I got another layer of armor I have to cut through, and then I finally get down to the meat of this person or this character I'm trying to shoot down. Was a little tough. And again, once you've started to realize you're going to have to adjust certain ratios in the game for you to survive at all, I would say one of the things you want to look at is your turning ratios and your look ratios. Like the speed of turning and looking with your thumbsticks, you definitely want to mess with those right away. Some people may want to go for the aim assist. I generally choose not to use aim assist actively. Like if it's in the game and it's kind of like a background feature and they don't tell you about it, you can't do anything about that. But if there is an aim assist, I generally speaking will turn it off. I don't really care for that feature too much. But there is one other thing that we wanted to remind you to turn off. I think it was turning off toggle to sprint. I think it was turning off toggle to sprint. Because that was one that, like, as soon as you stopped holding down the button in particular, you would just stop running. You know, stop moving. There's a couple other settings. I'm sure if I miss something, somebody will let me know in the comments or something like that. But yeah, overall, like I said, great game, well polished, definitely very on brand for the series, gore and irreverent behavior and humor throughout the game. If you've played Borderlands, you know what I'm talking about. There's a lot of toilet humor in the game. There's a lot of toilets in the game. And of course, you know, there's animated blood and gore, which may not be for some. It was definitely a shock when it first happened. I first saw it pop off for me, which, not to be too on the nose, it was exactly what happened. And I was like, oh, I did not expect that. That was crazy. But it was really fun. And I've been enjoying it a lot. It is tough. It is tense. There are some minor bugs and whatnot because it is, you know, an online game. And it's also a game from 2025. So, yeah, none of them are 100% complete. None of them are 100%, you know, we're polished. We're done. We got this. They're still working through the kinks. But I do say it's a solid game. And the fun thing about it is, like, I think all the Borderlands games seem to have like a slight a thread that weaves through all of them, but they can be played largely as a single player experience with the exception of maybe one or two. I think like more like the first Borderlands game and like the Borderlands, the pre-sequel game, kind of tie in together a little bit more tightly than the others, but each one of them has their own insular campaign for the most part that you can enjoy without having really played through the other games in the franchise. So I'd say if you're a fan of Borderlands, go get it. If you're curious, see if you can find a demo of it, but you definitely won't be disappointed in my personal opinion. And if you really love it, man, put it on hard mode. Let me know how it goes for you because I am trying it on normal. And I died like 7 times just trying to get out of one of the early on respawn points. The enemies were just close enough that they could throw shit at me and shoot at me when I respawned, and I didn't realize it at first, and I'm like, oh, this is terrible. I don't like this design at all. But it's just that one spot so far. But overall, like I said, the game's great, so I think you'll enjoy it. And also, we're talking about gaming stuff. Gaming stuff. I had this note that said we had to hold people accountable for stealing. I don't remember what that was. Aside from Bungie stealing art assets from various creators, which we've already talked about in the past, and they're still going to get slapped on the wrist for. They're not going to get in any real trouble for this, I think. Nintendo. The gaming company we've come to grow and love, the house of family-friendly gaming, has finally shat the bed and has decided they're going to put a patent down that's going to copyright certain gameplay mechanics you've come to know and love and respect, not the least of which is essentially the summon aspect, where a character will select a creature that will join them in battle and fight alongside them. Essentially what they're saying is they're referencing like the Pokemon, you know, throw a ball, a little critter pops out, it fights next to you, you dismiss it after battle, rinse, repeat. Now they did this in response to the game Pal World, which played a similar mechanic but then built upon it with a base building simulator where you collect certain pals, as they were known, like Pokemon. You collect these small little animals that are very, very directly inspired by Pokemon. And you put them together. You make them work and build shit and farm stuff. And, you know, you had gunplay in the game, which was like a different take on the genre. And, Nintendo basically sued Pal World almost out of business. And then they were like, well, fine, we're just going to copyright these gameplay mechanics. And our stupid U.S. Patent Office let them have them. I don't think the people who read the patent even really played video games to understand what they were doing. They're basically giving Nintendo an ability to kneecap any competitors for anything practically ever by being able to copyright such a tried and true gameplay mechanic, a mechanic that has existed, by the way, since before Nintendo existed, which is a very problematic thing to have to deal with. Before the Nintendo Entertainment Console actually came out, there's a little game you might have heard of called Dungeons & Dragons. Yeah, they crafted a summoning concept in a board game. So strictly, technically speaking, Nintendo probably is in copyright violation with Wizards of the Coast because that campaign, that character, you know, that gameplay concept was already created and crafted with Wizards of the Coast, and then they just took it and borrowed it and put it into Pokemon. So, and one could make an argument that not that they need the money, but Wizards of the Coast could be like, hey, by the way, over here, hey, I can't whistle like that, but you with the face, look at me, you stole my shit, we're suing you now. And they, we were just bullshitting, like, no, you can go ahead and hand over the patent. And we can tear that copyright right on up because that's just stupid. The gameplay, to patent a gameplay mechanic like that is ridiculous. I don't know. It would take somebody with the balls. And I mean, Wizards of the Coast could do it. I mean, if you're going to pick somebody who could champion the cause, Wizards of the Coast, I think personally, would have the stones and the finances and the fan base to go for it. Because fans of the games are not really excited about this idea at all. There's a very excellent video that I will link in the description of today's podcast. If you're curious about listening to more about the more legal ramifications about what this means, this gentleman's video is actually really well done, and I'll link it in the description. But it does have wider reaching implications for game studios as a whole. Because if you can copyright gameplay mechanics, how long is it before you copyright the double jump concept, right? A patent is out there somewhere. I mean, I'm sure it hasn't been filed because nobody would have ever thought, I should copyright this gameplay mechanic of allowing a character to double jump. Don't let Nintendo figure that one out. Because they're going to end up being able to kill off smaller studios that would make cooler, innovative games like the very much renowned and hailed Hollow Knight Silksong that just released recently. You could torch in a smaller studio in legal battles because they wouldn't have the finances to be able to fight a giant like Nintendo. And that gives Nintendo every reason to not do cool shit or new shit with games. Like if you're looking at the Switch 2, you'll notice that a lot of the stuff is a future forward look on, you know, the next iteration of the franchise, whether it's Mario Kart, Metroid, Legend of Zelda. They're basically not changing the gameplay formula, like why fix it isn't broken, but it also doesn't really offer any room for innovation. And they're like, we don't have to innovate if nobody else is allowed to make a game for fear of getting sued by us. It'd be like me copywriting the color orange. Like, you can't use orange anymore because I own the copyright for it. Every time you use orange, you owe me like, you know, 50 cents or whatever. Like, that's insane. It's a ridiculous concept. The fact that it got approved is well and hell beyond me. I have no idea how that even made it past the U.S. Patent Board, but it's like that's it's disturbing. It's worrying. I don't like that at all. And I hope that it gets overturned somehow. Somebody make a legal challenge to knock that shit off. Because we can't do this. We can't be that as you know, just as people. It's too much. You know, and speaking of people who be doing too much, let's talk about Tori Branham, because I missed catching her story last week during the podcast. So Tori Branham is a Republican. Excuse me, one second. I gotta pause this. I'm about to have a coughing fit. Okay, through the magic of the pause button, I survived that coughing fit. My apologies. But yeah, Tori Branham, formerly a U.S. Marine, which is also mildly disturbing in my personal opinion, because there's way too many people who've joined the armed forces who have some very backwards views on just human rights and decent, you know, being a decent person in general. Not everyone, but there's more than enough that it's worrying. But she is running for the 12th congressional district in the state of Georgia. And you guys might remember that she had tipped off federal immigration authorities about undocumented workers at a Hyundai plant in Georgia. So this is a plant that is going to be, it was purpose for designing and manufacturing batteries to go into Hyundai vehicles. For those of you who aren't aware, South Korea is actually an ally of the United States. There's been military base there for generations now, it feels like. And we had, up until a certain point, had relatively decent relations with South Korea, as you can see, is evidenced by the fact that we're inviting some of their companies over here to make stuff here, which would bring in, guess what, more jobs for Americans, right? Well, turns out that she just was whistleblowing on the plant, saying that there are undocumented workers there. And I think what she wasn't paying attention to was maybe there were some brown people that were there. Because usually when they say undocumented or illegal, they don't necessarily mean Asian. They usually mean Mexicans or Latinos in general. But yeah, even if she did know for some reason that there were undocumented South Korean workers there, the issue was that they weren't necessarily undocumented. Happens is a lot of companies had applied for a different type of visa, a visa that allows people to come here and work while the permanent work visa is being like, you know, run through the process, right? So it enables them to kind of like come in here. It's like a preliminary visa sort of thing. You get to be here. It's like a probationary period kind of thing. And then when your real visa comes through, you're locked in, you're good to go, but you didn't show up illegally. A lot of these people actually fell into that previous category where they weren't completely undocumented. But rather, they had a different type of documentation that our tonto, thick-headed ICE members, ICE agents, weren't smart enough or, you know, well-versed in the law enough to understand and recognize. And so they ended up shipping a bunch of these people back in handcuffs, by the way. Just people who were there at work. And part of the work was a training force who's going to be there, check out the plant, help work as the plant is being, you know, brought online, basically. So they're part of the onboarding process for the plant itself. When it became fully operational, they would have stuck around in some kind of training capacity and oversight capacity to ensure that the workers did a quality job, weren't injuring themselves, weren't breaking the equipment by using bad practices, et cetera, et cetera. Well, this fathead decided, well, I'm just gonna call and get him kicked out. Well, that's really great and all. Except for the part where what you're doing actively jeopardizes the operations of this plant, halting its opening, and also killing jobs in your area. The people who were there were going to be there just basically long enough to get the plant online, and then they were going back home. You would have then not had to worry about that at all. But now what you've done is not only hamstrung your community for jobs that could have actually helped, you know, enrich the community, would have made people who probably wouldn't have even voted Republican before to say, you know what, probably wasn't going to vote Republican, that Tori Branham did all right by, you know, helping out the Hyundai plant, yeah, and X, Y, and Z thing. But here's the thing I have as an issue with a lot of conservatives in particular, but like politicians in general do this sometimes. They'll just start talking and saying things before they consider the broader reaching ramifications of what they're doing. And they end up shooting themselves and a lot of other people in the foot, which is what she's done because this could affect the state of Georgia in the tune of possible billions. That's a lot of money for a state to lose because one lady just couldn't shut her fucking mouth and had to do the I'm telling kind of shit. She actually calls herself the MAGA Karen because people were calling her that online. So she just took it as her nickname. This is how stupid she is to be proud. You know what I mean? Like, it's like, I'm so proud of this, and it's a dumb thing that I'm going to be proud of. I'm going to wear it like a badge of honor. What the fuck do you mean? She even goes so far as to say, like, the funniest part is they're saying it's going to keep me from winning this election in District 12. Well, they're a smart one. I don't know. They're a smart one. I'm in a district with 22 counties that are all Republican except for one. So she thinks just because all the entire state's red or that area's red, she's going to win. She's not entirely incorrect. I'm going to be honest with you. A lot of people who lean that way, generally speaking, don't tend to give a fuck about facts unless it makes them look good. So they'll probably ignore the fact that like she cost the state like a shitload of money and a shitload of job opportunities. Because for all we know, Hyundai might just be like, we were going to build the plant in Florida, but after this shit, nope. And they could just sell off the land to somebody else for cheap and be like, screw this, we'll build somewhere else. We don't have to be in Georgia. We can build this shit. We can build these batteries anywhere else where they want jobs and money. Because apparently Georgia does not. And losing that investment and watching them be like, oh, we're going to come back, we're going to dismantle the plant and, you know, whatever. We'll leave basically the bones of it up and we're going to ship this shit to, I don't know, what's another southern state that probably has more of a blue constituency and would probably lean our way a little bit? That'll happen. It's really bizarre to me that people, and like I said, this isn't necessarily just a, you know, Republican versus Democrat versus independent versus the Tories and the Whigs versus, you know, the Jets and the Sharks kind of thing. It's not necessarily purely a partisan issue. This is a people issue. It's a people problem. And people who, generally speaking, don't tend to think before they do shit don't really get the idea that, like, when you actively work against your own self-interest, it doesn't work out for you. That's why it's called your self-interest, because it's in the interest of oneself. If you are actively working against that and working against those people who could bear you up in times of trouble or need, you have fucked yourself. No one else to blame but you, right? So if she ends up losing this election, which she probably won't, but if she does, she'd have no one else to blame but herself, you know? We start to look around and see all this stuff that happens in the political world in particular, but also in the business world within our families. And we start to go like, well, where were you part of the problem? You know what I mean? So again, we talked about accountability on the podcast before. Where could you have done better? Where could you have, you know, shown a little bit more light on something, been a little bit more understanding, a little bit more forward thinking, but you don't. And I find that there's a thing between, like, there's certain people who are out there who are just inconsiderate, right? They just do whatever they want, damn the consequences, and I don't give a fuck what you got going on. They're inconsiderate, they're rude, they're bullish. Like this lady. She didn't think about the consequences of her actions because all that mattered to her was getting what she wanted. And I think she understood that there were consequences to her actions, but it didn't matter. So that's an inconsiderate kind of person. Then there's somebody who's thoughtless, which in my personal estimation is actually a little bit more dangerous in a way. Because a thoughtless person acts with no regard for anybody but themselves. But it's not because they have any ulterior motives. They're just too selfish and blind to care. Like, it's one thing to be like, hey, I'm doing this because fuck you, which is kind of what this MAGA Karen lady is doing, right? Tony Branham. It's one thing to be like, hey, fuck you, this is why I'm doing this. That doesn't feel great to be on the receiving end of that. It's another thing to be like, oh, I didn't even consider you at all. You weren't even a calculation in why I did what I did. That's actually worse. That's almost like a kind of sociopathy where you're like, nothing matters unless it matters to me. And then until it makes things difficult for me, I don't care. You know what I mean? And I think a lot of people act that way without even realizing that they act that way until they see somebody go like, hey, what the fuck is your problem? And then they gotta go like, well, why is this not okay? I'm like, you didn't consider me or anybody else in what you were doing when you did it. You just did thing and then we're just like, that's fine. But no, it's not. Like, we all have to exist here. And like, why are you doing shit that actively goes against what everybody's best interests would be? Even your own. And I think there's a difference because some people out there are just thoughtless. Some people are inconsiderate. And they're not necessarily mutually exclusive. I mean, you can be both, obviously. But, you know, it's a really interesting line to draw when you look at these people who are inconsiderate. But then again, some of them are just thoughtless, which I think is the more terrifying part. And I want to say that she just did this just because she's an asshole. And that's probably most of it. But there's other people out there who don't, and who may not think it through as much as she does. And you see them all the time. You'll see them on TV crying about, well, I voted for so-and-so, but now my this and this is gone. I voted for so-and-so, but now this is being taken away. I voted for so-and-so, but now this right of mine is being impugned upon, and I feel disenfranchised and discarded. Oh, really? But did they tell you what they were going to do and how they were going to be? Well, then why did you not listen to them? Why did you not understand that that's what they meant and they were going to stand on that business? Do you now feel very much like you are going to just get stomped on and no one's going to give a shit about you? And I really hate to bring it back to the political shit, but it happened. So we're going to talk about it. I mean, there's no way I'm going to dodge away from it. Let's start with the softball stuff. First of all, Nancy Mace getting caught off guard by a reporter. Well, you know, we'll go with her next. Kristi Noem, probably the best one, because I can't stand Kristi Noem, and she's just a hateful, horrible turd of a human being. Doing a photo shoot with her ice buddies is caught on camera during this video, holding her weapon, barrel up, pointed into the face of the ICE agent standing on her left. Like, she's literally got the barrel like almost at his jawline with her hand on the, you know, like just around the trigger guard. And it's like, if you flick that trigger somehow, some wild accident, it gets snagged on a button or a buckle or a belt or a zipper, and it blows this dude's head off on TV, that's on you. So even people on the right were like, what the fuck is, what kind of weapon awareness do you have right now? Where you have the barrel pointed up. The other idiots did have theirs pointed up too, but one guy had his rifle pointed down, the other one had his pointed up, but neither of them had him pointed at anybody else, except for this bright dipshit over here. But yeah, and so she's getting called out for that stuff, which is perfect and fine and fair, because that's just gun safety, right? There's nothing political about gun safety. It's just you have to be mindful about where you're pointing your weapon, right? That's just given. That's a given. Everybody should be able to get behind that. But then you got to look at like Trump doing this this whole shit with the like basically federalizing the police in D.C. and then threatening to send them to other cities like Chicago and Baltimore. But then he goes, I'm going out to dinner in D.C. to show you guys how safe it is. Right. And so people are going to start touting him like, look at our president. He's not afraid. Really? Then why do you have 12 fucking bulletproof vehicles blocking off an entire section of the street? Almost like an entire city block just for him, with multiple Secret Service agents that were armed and ready to guard him. If it was so safe, why didn't he just go out by himself? He don't believe his own bullshit. And he wants you to believe it. And that's why they keep saying like, oh, you know, the left is responsible for this whole thing. They've been lying to us the whole time. No. He's been lying directly to your face, but you're so willful in your hatred and your stupidity and your bigotry that you're willing to swallow it to, quote unquote, own the libs without thinking about the personal cost. Like I said, these people who are crying about, like, my Social Security got wiped out, or, oh, they took away the right to abortion. They took away, you know, they're going to look at taking away same-sex marriage. This is a very bizarre time for us as a country. There have been crazy times in the past. This is just a really weird one where you watch people actively work against their own self-interest and then scream at other people who didn't vote in the box for them. It would be one thing if for every Republican that went in there and voted, a Democrat was like standing behind them just steering the pin with their own hand. That's not what happened. You chose this and now you have an attitude about it. You feel some kind of way about it. That's not my fucking fault. It's not my fucking problem. You cry your blue tears somewhere else. And then remember that you did this. But you're so enamored of this idea of owning somebody and getting over on somebody. And maybe that's the problem. is that your inconsiderate or completely thoughtless behavior has somehow come back to haunt you. I mean, you have to see, when he walked into this restaurant, right? There are people already inside protesting and chanting until the point where they're like, we got to not do this. And it was just hilarious that they were calling him America's Hitler. And they were making up this, they made this crazy jingle. I don't remember it. I just remember going like, wow, these ladies really went all out for it. And congratulations to, you know, maybe liberal white ladies to a certain degree, because that was actually pretty funny. Not everything you guys do is awesome, I'm going to be honest with you. Some things I think you probably need to simmer down on, but that was pretty funny. But yeah, the MAGA morons sometimes, man, like, I do call you a moron because, like, you really have eschewed logic and reason and fact, rationality for, you know, you sold your soul basically for a pot of soup. And the soup is really just, you know, Trump's toilet water. And it's infecting you. And you need to spit it out. And you need to regurgitate what you've swallowed so that you can ingest something that's more wholesome, more American, more, you know, human. And I need you to do that because we all got to live here together. You know what I mean? I need you to do it for yourself, but I need you to do it for all of us too, because we all want you to be better people. None of us actively really hate you. We just hate some of the shit you do. Pretty sure that most of you are actually fairly decent people if you could just drop this other rhetoric. If you keep holding on to it, though, that's what makes you a bad person. And they keep believing that the left is out to get them. We don't give a fuck. And I'm not saying the left, because I would say I'm more leaning left than right. But I'm also kind of a little bit more towards the center, actually, because I've got some conservative views, mostly more liberal ones. So I feel like I'm more center to the left. But yeah, the left are not out to get you. They're really not. And this overblown notion that, you know, everything that happens that's bad to you is coming from the left. You have to remember, as people have been saying lately, the call is coming from inside the house. Case in point, we're going to talk about it. You knew it was coming. And I know that you were waiting for this. We all know that Charlie Kirk, founder of Turning Point USA and basically right-wing talking piece, was shot and killed the day before 9/11, which would be 9/10. And I think that this is a very interesting case to look at, because they've captured the person who is they claim is a shooter. They allege is a shooter who says he's a shooter. Look, I don't really dig into conspiracy theory much. I don't know. It feels a little too convenient. But at the same time, you know, hey, there's been shooters that have been caught before. It's crazy that this is the one that they're getting and they haven't done anything about. But it's just, it's a wild time to be looking at the news and go like, I don't know that I believe this. I don't know if I believe what you're saying. Again, like we're talking about, like, when people on the right in particular and more focused, spotlight is going to be shown on MAGA Republicans and their constituency. Nancy Mace, as I was mentioning earlier, was caught by a reporter when she's basically touting the idea as, you know, this shooter is somebody from the radical left, and the Democrats need to own this one. And then the reporter caught her on the back foot and says, oh, so by that rationale, does that mean that the Republicans should own the shooting of our two Minnesota representatives, her and her husband, I'm going to botch her name here. I was going to say Hartman, but it was Melissa Hortman. Her and her husband, and I believe also their pet dog, were shot and killed in their home. And then there's another Minnesota state senator who was shot nine times. And it's just like, what? Are you kidding me? This is John Hoffman. This is another thing, too. I was getting Hoffman, Hortman, Hartman. I was rolling them all together, and I didn't mean to do that. I wasn't trying to be, insensitive. But Senator John Hoffman and his wife were shot that same day. They survived, but unfortunately, Melissa Hortman and her husband did not. And so the reporter goes, so do the Republicans own that one? If the Democrats are going to have to eat this shooting of Charlie Kirk, shouldn't you guys have to eat this one? I'm like, that guy was actually proven to be one of your own. And she goes, well, we're talking about Charlie Kirk here. And it's like, yeah, we're talking about Charlie Kirk. But while you're also talking about political violence, you have to be open to the possibility that you, again, you've stuck your neck all the way out for this thing. You got to be ready for it to be partway on the chopping block. But also, again, these are some of the dumbest and least qualified people to be in public office. And that's why these ideas don't click to them when they start running their mouths. They don't really consider the fact that, hey, the stuff that I'm saying has an impact. It's like throwing pebbles into a pond. There's a ripple effect that happens. When we talk about words having power, we have to realize that we are also in that equation. Me, you, Nancy Mace, Charlie Kirk, Donald Trump, anybody, you point to anybody, the words you say have power. The words you say have an impact. They have an impact. That's why when we mention that whole thing about ripples in a pond, the ripple effect is because of the impact of the pebble that hits the pond. And in some cases, people are throwing full-on stones and boulders. Going back again to our topic, Charlie Kirk. Should he have been shot in the neck for this shit? Fuck no. That's insane. That is a really wild and radical thing to say, that he deserved this. I don't think he deserved that any more than Trump deserved to be shot in the ear, any more than JFK deserved to be shot in the head, any more than Malcolm X deserved to be shot down, any more than Ronald Reagan, even as ass of a president as he was, deserved to be attacked even though he survived his assassination attempt. They didn't deserve any of that. But you have to consider those chickens have to come home to roost somewhere. And when your words have power, and you make a living on saying the kind of vitriolic and incendiary things that a man like Charlie Kirk is known to have said, and if I have to put the documents out there for you, I can and I will, but all you have to do is just really Google up some Charlie Kirk quotes, and you'll start to see that as you listen to more of his speeches, the racist ideology where he talks about he wouldn't trust a black pilot because, you know, they probably failed a couple of their tests. I mean, how do you think they got the fucking job? You don't just get to crash planes and then keep flying them, ass. You know, the rhetoric that he would spout, you know, regarding women and, and he was married, which was wild to me. I can't imagine being married and saying some shit like that about women and then expecting to come home and get some. Like, what was going on there? Like, that is crazy. His attacks on other black speakers and activists, you know, where he would call for his people to go and actually, you know, harangue them on their social media pages. If you can find their address, dox them. You know, things of that nature, right? His incendiary rhetoric around immigration, around white nationalism and white superiority. Those kinds of incendiary and hateful and divisive comments and that rhetoric as a whole, because it wasn't just comments, it wasn't just some offhand thing he said. This was a platform that he constructed and crafted and turned it into a thing called Turning Point USA, where they were actively trying to seek out young white men in particular and trying to get them all riled up and fluffed up like the country's being taken from you. No, it isn't. If you're young and white and you're disenfranchised, that is largely your fault. That is a failing on you, especially if you're in a college like that. Like, you have literally all the advantages stacked in your favor. You're white, you're a man, you're probably, let's say, at least most likely from a Judeo-Christian background, upbringing or whatever. Your parents probably have more than the average median household income. You know, you had access to probably better schooling in better locations with lower crime, more job opportunities, more, you know, wealth equity being spread out. So you had all these advantages and you're still failing. That's a you problem. That's a you problem. And you can't get me to see that any other way because I'm not a stupid person. I also know how math and logic and economics and science works.
You know what I mean? This is like the law of like, this is like thermodynamics. Like you literally have all the fire behind you and you still closed, down the flue and you're like, oh, no, we don't want any of that heat. Word? I'll take it. But Charlie Kirk was building a campaign where he would go and speak to young white men in particular. And at the same time, this is the thing he said, women, and he said this, I watched him say this on an interview to a young lady in college, to her face, saying that you women are coming here to earn the MRS degree. He's like, the only reason you're in college is so you can get married and then get knocked up, basically. He's like, you're not here to earn a degree that you're going to use in the job force. You're here to find a husband. And I'm like, wow. Wow, dude. What a wild thing to say to somebody who's come there to seek an education, to better their lives and say, the only reason you're here is so you can become a cocksocket for another guy. That's how little he thought of them. That he said this to a young woman's face, disparaging her pretty little white face in front of all her pretty little white friends. And then they were still like, people like, Charlie Kirk's our guy. Like, really? Really? If I was her dad, I'd want to have a serious sit down with Charlie Kirk. And I'm not saying that it should have happened, but I think as a father, that would really piss me the fuck off. Like, hey, who the fuck do you think you are to talk to my baby girl like this? And when you send that kind of rhetoric out, that fires people up. And then here's the other thing. If you're not, which is the supposition now, I can't claim this is true. Some of the supposition is that maybe Kirk was attacked because he wasn't right wing enough. Imagine not being hateful enough towards women, minorities of any stripe, and the LGBTQ community. They're like, he's not hardcore enough. He's not saying enough. We got to shoot him. If that's the case, and that's, like I said, mostly conjecture. And so I'm just putting that out there so you understand this is part of the conjecture that's out there in the world. If that's the case and he wasn't hardcore enough, that should scare you more than anything. That there's, if you were worried about him, there are people who are even worse than him who are saying he wasn't doing enough for their cause. That should terrify you. That should actually snap you out of your reverie. Because at that point, when they're that hateful, like I said again, to their own white women, that they don't give a fuck about you. And it's really interesting that they had these vigils and stuff for like Charlie Kirk. And, you know, where's Trump? I mean, when he was asked directly about Charlie Kirk, he basically was like, yes, very sad. Anyway, look at how we're building the new ballroom here. Within literally like 4 seconds of being asked about Charlie Kirk, he threw out a backhanded platitude and then started talking about how he was having the White House ballroom constructed. He gave him barely less than a column inch of commentary. And of course, he would later have to go on and say, you know, I think that the political violence is bad, you know, this and the other. And like, well, we all know that political violence is bad, but let's just be honest. What happened to Charlie Kirk, in my personal opinion, is not political violence. He wasn't a politician. He was a podcaster, much like myself, but in a very different stripe, obviously. But he was a podcaster. He was an influencer. He was basically like a motivational speaker. Did he have political views? Yes, but he also had some very crass and disgusting social and personal ones. This wasn't political violence. Like I said, it wasn't Senator Charlie Kirk. It wasn't the Honorable Representative Charlie Kirk. It wasn't Vice President Charlie Kirk, Prime Minister Charlie Kirk. It wasn't Maharaja Charlie Kirk. It was just Charlie Kirk, that Turning Point USA nigga. That's what that was. This is not political violence. He's not a political figure. He's just shot over some of his beliefs, so to speak, as we, you know, that's, we think that that's what it was, but we don't know for sure until we talk to the person who shot him and be like, hey, what was that all about? And he says one way or the other, you don't really know. Like I said, it could have been somebody who's just like, hey, I was all aboard for this dude, but like, I find him to be morally reprehensible. I think the things that he says are abhorrent as a human being, and nobody who has those kind of ideals should deserve to live, in my opinion. That's his opinion, and he's entitled to it. It's a wrong one, but I mean, that would be his opinion. He's able to have that. But I mean, that's the issue when it comes to somebody having this kind of, you know, just incendiary and inflammatory kind of rhetoric and speech going out. Like I said, it has to land somewhere. if you want to put it in Bible terms for those of you who are out there, and you might send this to somebody who's going to be more along the religious ideology, you know, like the, of someone like Charlie Kirk or what they claim to believe in, right? I don't know about you. If that's the kind of Jesus you worship, I want no parts. But what I heard was from the Bible that the curse causeless does not come to rest. That means that when you send those evil and hateful words out there, they have to land somewhere. And in Charlie Kirk's case, when he said, I do believe that it's going to be worth a couple of gun deaths so that we can keep the Second Amendment, I don't think he expected those curses to come home to roost, those chickens, those curses, to come home to roost and to land on him or his family. And it's horrible for, you know, the family who's left behind, the people who cared about him. I mean, that's nightmarish that that's a thing you'd have to wake up to and have to deal with. However, I will say that because of what Charlie Kirk said himself during his life, this is kind of the outcome that he spoke about. Of course, no one ever says these kinds of things and expects it to come home to roost and land on them or to affect them personally. They never expect that, and they never dream it's going to happen to them until the day that it does. And it's unfortunate that that's the track that he chose to run on, because for somebody who admittedly did have a lot of charisma and was attracting crowds, you could have put that kind of skill and that kind of, you know, affability to any other kind of use, and it probably would have been a better use of your time. You absolutely could have done better, and it's unfortunate that that's how everything ends for this gentleman. But again, like I said, I can't really be shocked. I can't really be surprised. I'm not surprised that Trump wasn't really too bothered. I am surprised that they decided to fly the flags at half mast, but they didn't do that for Melissa Hortman, who is actually a state senator and a state representative. But you know, these are the times we're living in, right? And here's the thing, as a pastor once said, I'm gonna see if I can find his speech too. He's like, I can't believe that they flew the flags at half mast and are basically telling us that we have to honor and respect a man who didn't even care about my life. That I am supposed to be beholden to this government and to pay homage to a dude who couldn't possibly care less if I lived or died. What kind of part of the game is that? I've never seen that before in my life. I mean, do we drop the flags to half mast on Hitler's birthday? And I'm not saying that they're the same. But if you're looking for a bad guy, right, it's hard to come across a worse one in most common knowledge, right? Do we drop down on one knee at the halftime show for Pol Pot? Do we offer up thoughts and prayers for Stalin? No, we don't do that because they were bad guys. Charlie Kirk was a bad guy saying bad shit. Let's just be real. You might not like what I have to say about him, but that's a bad, to say those kinds of things about Black people, about women, about the LGBTQ community, you know what I mean? That's a bad person. That is objectively a bad person. You're just saying things to hurt people just to hurt people and to drum up support for whatever your agenda is. That's not okay. If you can't agree with all of it, you should at least be able to agree with a portion of those statements and be like, yeah, that you should be able to look at them and agree and be like, that's a bad person. That is a bad guy. He says bad things and he's helping other people be encouraged to do bad things. That's a bad person. That's an objective value judgment. That's just not as part of the social contract. That's not what we do here kind of thing. And it's unfortunate that it happened that way. And I hate it for him. You know what I mean? But he wasn't a martyr. He was a sacrifice. Like, he basically sacrificed himself for what he believed in. He should be proud at least of that. Like, he did say that. That was what he said out of his face. I didn't make that up. I didn't concoct that statement. He said that we're probably going to have some deaths in order to keep our Second Amendment freedoms. And I believe in the Second Amendment as well. I'm one of those liberal people who also believes that our government can't be wholly trusted. And those who seek those highest positions of power actively are probably the least well-intentioned and the least deserving of those positions. That said, I do believe in the right of a well-regulated militia to, you know, bear up the public defense. I don't think that, you know, Everybody should have an AK-47. That's insane. I think that some people probably could. That's also true. Where there's like, people have these weapons of war that no one should have. I don't believe that. I don't believe that. Because the weapons of war the day when that was written were all the same. Everybody had a fucking, you know, musket. Everybody had lead balls and paper, cotton wadding that they'd shove in there and gunpowder. They were all pretty much the same. You didn't get much. I mean, they got slightly better over time, but they were all pretty much the same. You know, click, stick it in here, pew, that kind of shit. Now, you got to have something bigger and better. You got to have at least something. You know what I mean? Because, you know, if they've got drone strikes, people are like, well, you're going to do it against a drone. I mean, have you ever heard of a thing called a basement? You know what I mean? There's other ways to, you know, stand up to a government that you feel is actively trying to disenfranchise you and or control you and or turn into a fascist state. There are very many other ways to do the thing. If it does come down to brass tacks, taking away the people's right to bear firearms is one of the more fundamental rights that keeps us from being able to defend ourselves. Sure, you can go the Middle East route where people are out there with their faith in a fucking rock and a can of gasoline with a sock in it. You could do that. Should you? No. And I don't think we should have to be armed against the off chance that our government could do something that would disenfranchise all of us or a general section of our population. I don't think we should have to worry about that. But we do. We're seeing it right now. Like, we're actively living in those times that we were worried, that the founding fathers were worried about. They're like, hey, we had to do this shit before. You know what I mean? When we got here, even though they fucked up how they got here, but we had to do this against the British. There may come a time when you might have to do this again. And if that's the case, we need to make sure we provide a way for the people to be able to do that. And then they want to dismantle it. And they're like, no. I mean, I don't think like anybody really on the left, generally, I hope that most people aren't so stupid as to think that if you get rid of all guns, all gun violence will go away. Or that people will just magically turn into better human beings. That's just a stupid stance to stand on. I've known enough liberal people who are just like, we should get rid of all the guns. And I'm like, you're an absolute moron. There's no fucking way. And I don't want to live in that world. That's a nightmarish world. That sounds like we're just one step away from becoming the Hunger Games. I don't want to live in that world. That's insane. But like I said, I do hate it for Charlie Kirk's kids. I would say I hate it for his wife, but I'll be honest, she kind of chose that. So I think it's unfortunate. I hate it for the kids. The kids don't know any better. They're children. They don't have any, you know, they probably haven't had that kind of stuff imprinted on their little hard drives yet. But I don't necessarily feel bad for his wife. I feel like it's an unfortunate situation for his wife because I wouldn't wish the loss of a spouse on anybody. That's just not cool. I'm not crying any blue tears for Charlie Kirk. I'm not encouraging people to do what they did, what this person did to other people that they feel speak in a way or act in a way that they don't agree with. There's a reason why you can sit down and have a conversation with him. And for all his faults, I do say that, like, at least he would sit down and talk to people. He probably could have chosen a better way to conduct the conversation, though. You know? Not even probably. He absolutely could have. But that doesn't mean he deserved to be shot for it or hurt for it in any way. You know, like, as far as, like, physically anyway. Like, there's no reason for that. And I will say this. People go, like, violence is never the answer. Oh, it's sometimes the answer. Or it's at least an answer. It's not the answer. But it's definitely one. It's definitely on the list of the multiple choice questions of life. It's definitely on that list somewhere. And I hope that we can move forward and understand without looking through, again, we were watching Princess Mononoke last week, trying to look through eyes unclouded by hate, because I don't have any hatred for Charlie Kirk. I never had any hatred for him while I was alive. I have even less for it now that he's gone. But I do have a great swelling of sympathy and just, I mean, in a way, it's sadness because there is lost potential there. There's a chance Charlie Kirk could have been one of the greatest orators of our time and actually could have been a civil rights activist. As it turns out, he was neither of those things. And that's unfortunate for him and his legacy, but that's also the legacy he chose to cultivate and craft. And I think that if we go forward, we have to be mindful, you know, of how we interact with one another, because, again, those kinds of inconsiderate or thoughtless words and actions that he did and said and cultivated and championed, they land somewhere. There are further, deeper-reaching consequences that you're not fully aware of when you're being thoughtless or you're being inconsiderate or insensitive. There are broader consequences at play.
I don't know.
That was, like I said, that was a whole big section on this, and this is a lot longer than I had intended, but I mean, just had to get that out there. But let's shift gears here. We're talking about some lighter stuff. Oh, and also, if you haven't been paying attention, check out these protests in Nepal. Plus the Gen Z people who are like, you know, we don't want these people in government. That is when you start to fuck with people and they start fucking back, it's a very real consequence. You're not going to see a lot about it in mass media. I'll see if I can drop something about it into the chat here, into the description of the podcast. But you should be paying attention to this stuff because it isn't going to get covered, and you're going to want to look at like a broader spectrum of news than just the two or three sources that you're familiar with or that come on your television. Look around. There's a lot of shit going off, and we should be very much aware of it. I'll leave a link to it because I'm not fully versed on it. I'll leave a link to the story so you can check it out yourself in the description of the podcast. Anyways, moving right along. Man, I had this fun conversation regarding a comment that I had when I was invited to a friend's house for a little soiree. And I've hosted many events at my home over the years, and I've always held that the one thing that you don't do is show up early to a house party. I don't mean a party being held at someone's house. That could be a birthday party, it could be a graduation party, retirement, something like that. No. Like, we're just going to sit around and just kind of like chill and bullshit, you know, and that kind of thing. You know, maybe we'll throw some games on the table, play some cards, play some board games. Maybe we'll just drink and listen to music and talk shit, but we're just hanging out. Don't show up early to that shit. Don't show up early to that shit. And the reason I say that is because as a host, not only don't show up early, don't show up on time. Like, the time benchmark is basically to give you an idea of this is when things will begin to happen. Not like when we're going to have fun at 7:00 right then. As soon as you walk in, fun will begin. Like, no. Like, fucking relax. Jesus. You guys never heard of foreplay? Like, build up to this shit. And also, like I said, if you're a host, you know. If you've ever hosted anything, you know that sometimes no matter how well you prepare, no matter how well you've planned out everything, no matter what kind of schedule and timer, like schedule you've set, timers you've got like lined up, alarms you've primed, things happen. Such and such thing might burn a little bit. You know, this ingredient might have gone bad. You might have to run out to the store to grab this. Oh, we didn't have enough cups or plates, so I have to stop and do that. Or, oh, I forgot. I didn't vacuum yesterday. I should have done it. You know, the carpet's a mess. I had to do that. Oh, man, I've done all this stuff. I need to take a shower. I didn't budget enough time for me to take a shower. That's usually the thing that gets me. I've done all the other shit. Everything's ready to go. And I'm standing there sweating, smelling like a dog. And I'm like, I need to take a shower. And then ding dong. I'm like, fuck. It is 7:01 and you're at my door. You could have, dude, say, hey, man, traffic. I don't give a shit. You know what I mean? Personally, I'm of the opinion, and I've of the cut that I say, you know, showing up at like 10, 15 after the time you're supposed to be there for a house party kind of thing, even a birthday party, unless it's a surprise party of some sort, like even that kind of stuff is fine. It's a fashionably late kind of thing. Like, you're just late enough that, you know, nobody's going to get mad at you, but you're just like at that time frame where it's like, this wasn't disrespectful. You know what I mean? Anything could have happened. Oh, you know what? I forgot my wallet. I had to turn around and go back. Make up an excuse if you have to. Don't tell me shit. Just show up and be like, hey, what's up? I'm just glad you're here. What do you guys think? Do you think it's like, I think it's kind of sloppy to show up on time to somebody's place. Because it dug us in. It presumes that you're the only thing that they are thinking about. And then nothing else exists. In a way, it's its own kind of thoughtlessness. We're like, I didn't think that maybe, like I said, so-and-so might have had to, you know, pick up some fresh this, that, or the other. So-and-so might want to have a shower. Might want to be able to enjoy the fact that their house is clean, prepped, and ready to go for a party or whatever. For like just 5-10 minutes, just be like, I can finally sit down and relax without having to have somebody up their ass the second they finish one task, then everybody's there. See, I think that's one of those things, again, where thoughtlessness comes into play, where people are so wrapped up in them and who they are and what they want that they don't think about anybody else until that lack of thought ends up impacting them. Like, once it becomes a thing, like, if you rang my doorbell and you were, I said, we're going to start off around 7 o'clock, and you show up at 7 o'clock and 3 seconds, and you're ringing my doorbell, and I'm still in the shower, you're just going to have to stand outside and wait. That's all that happens. Because you didn't think enough about the fact that, like, I might have other shit going on in my life that it's not just you, and life also happens, and so we have to be mindful of that. So give people a little bit of running room, especially when they're hosting at their place. Yeah. And if I'm coming to see you, trust and believe when I say I'm going to be at least 10 minutes late. Minimum. If anything above and beyond that happens, something happened. But I'm going to be at least 10 minutes late because I'm not really late. I'm giving you some breathing room, a little bit of a cushion for you to adjust. And it's really weird for people who are like, you know, I need to have, you know, I need my social battery to be charged. And when it's drained, I have to like let people, you know, get everybody out and then do the thing to read. Like, the last thing you want, especially those people who are like, you know, dealing with social anxiety or who, you know, whatever. I'm not going to pretend to know what your thing is, but whatever your thing is that makes you be like, I can't deal with a lot of people for a long time. Every minute you can have not having to worry about that, take it. And every minute you can have without having to just to put that on other people, because that's another thing that people will say. It's like, I have social anxiety, so I just assume other people do. You might be right, you might be wrong, but that's not your place to say. What you should do is just give them that moment. Let them have that breath. Let them have that extra like 10, 15 minutes to sit down and be like, whew, all the cooking's done, all the cleaning's done, the banners are up, you know, the card tables are set up. We got the drinks made and ready to go. Got like 10 minutes. We can just sit back and relax before people show up. Give them that. You're going to take 2 days to recharge after hanging out with your friends anyway. Give these people 10 minutes. That's just wild to me that people are just like, you got to be there around. No, don't do that. Don't do that to people. You got Facebook. You got Instagram. Let them know, like, hey, man, I'll be a little bit late. Send them a text message. Call them, FaceTime, whatever. They might not answer, but just be like, hey, man, I'm going to be running a little behind or whatever. Or I'm going to go pick this shit up. Do you need anything? I can stop real quick. And then give them a little time, man. Oh, speaking of Facebook, I got an idea that would make shit work. People would actually go back on it. Bring back fucking Farmville, you cowards. Bring back those cool Facebook games that had people on Facebook forever. And that's how you could get rid of the ads right there. You turn Facebook as the Facebook gaming thing back on and turn it into what like every free, like every games as a service model thing is. You know, where it's a free-to-play game, but then you pay in all this extra money for cosmetics and little gems and tokens to do X, Y, and Z thing in the game. Do that. You'll be able to fund Facebook 10 times over within the first year. I promise you. People will spend money on Facebook so they can have their little gems for whatever game it is. You don't have to worry about, you know, I gotta put ads in here every 3 minutes or no one's gonna look at Facebook. People are stopping looking at Facebook anyway. I don't even use mine. I haven't used mine in months. And there's a reason. It's beyond the whole, you know, Trump and Zuckerberg connection. But yeah, I've noticed it's been a lot more fulfilling to not have fucking Facebook sometimes. It's been difficult to miss out on certain things, but it's been so much nicer in some ways. Oh, and while we were talking about the whole party thing or whatever, we need to stop this shit right now. I've heard people do this. And it's gotten to the point where I'm like, if you ask me that question one more time, we got. So you're invited to a party, right? And somebody's like, "Hey, I'd like to throw a little party. We're gonna do this at like, you know, maybe 8 o'clock. You know, let's say like 7-8 o'clock Saturday evening. You know, come somewhere around there. You know, maybe bring something to drink. I'll have snacks and stuff ready. You know, bring a board game or two if you want. But I got stuff here. But yeah, I just want to see you guys. And you know, it'd be cool if you would come." And they ask you, "Who's gonna be there?" Don't come. Don't even show up. Don't even respond. If your first thought is who's gonna be there, don't show up. I don't want you there. I'm so sick of this. Like, who's gonna be? Who do you think I was gonna invite? Come on, man. We run in the same circles. Who the fuck you think is gonna be there? Who are you beefing with right there? If that's what you really want to know, you should be like, "Hey, is so and so gonna be there? Because if they're gonna be there, I'm not gonna be there." I'm like, "Well, in that case, we got other shit to talk about." But this, who all's gonna be there? Nobody. As a matter of fact, nobody. Party's canceled. You're not invited. You're not invited at all. I'm so over answering that fucking question. It's 2025. I'm a grown ass adult. You're a grown ass adult. Bring your ass over here and be sociable and learn how to talk shit out with your friends, or don't come. Just be like, "Nah." All right, cool. And you'll find this real quick. I found this too with some of my own friends. The more I've had to deal with that kind of stuff and deal with like, who's going to be there? Who's going to say this? Who's going to bring that? I'm like, I don't want to do this shit no more. Like, I'd rather just sit by myself. And I hate that too, because I'm a very social person. And I love being out and about. I hate being stuck in my fucking house. It drives me crazy. I miss going out and, you know, even if I'm not hitting the clubs, you know what I mean? Going hitting a bar, hit a pool hall, you know what I mean? Sometimes I'll go and just be like, "Hey, there's a concert in the park." I would just go and check that shit out. Sometimes I'll just walk down the street and be like, "That restaurant looks cool." I pop in, sit down, have a beer or two, and then be like, "That was a fun experience," and then leave. But I get so exhausted with the idea of having to cater to everybody's who is and who's ain't list. It's unfucking believable. Anyway, let's wrap this up with something. Oh, you know what I found out too? I'm going to wrap this up with football, but we were talking about in a private conversation, myself and a couple of online friends were talking about the concept of of white privilege, right? And it's like, maybe we should stop calling it white privilege, since we're constantly talking about ways. I've mentioned this before, kind of in jest. We're talking about ways to that the ways that we have softened language that has also softened the impact of the language. We've softened the words, but we've also softened like the definition and the meaning of what's behind those words, right? By making it sound more culturally palatable, we've made the idea behind it that was abhorrent in the first place a little bit more culturally acceptable as well. And I don't think that that's a good thing for anybody. It doesn't help anyone. You know what I mean? If you're talking about, the problem that we have where there are people who are living on the streets right now, even though we have more houses per capita than anybody could live in, there are literally more homes built and standing already than we have people to put in said homes. And we call these people the unhoused? Bitch, please. They are not unhoused. They are homeless. Making them sound like this is a choice that they made. I've chosen to become, like they became undressed. I've chosen to be unhoused. And I shall live on the street. And I shall make my victuals from this garbage can. Like, this, no. No one's unhoused, motherfucker. They're homeless. Yo, this dude's homeless, man. He need a place to live. Unhoused is a choice. Homeless is some shit happened. We got to help this cat. But when we're talking about white privilege, I'm like, you know what? Maybe we should turn away from that language then. Make it sound a little bit more, genteel, I guess, as I would put it. It's not your white privilege. You've just been racially pre-approved. And I thought my friend was going to shit. So if you have somebody and you're talking about white privilege, they'll say, "No, I prefer that if you just said I've been racially pre-approved." That'll get a laugh and it'll probably lighten the situation up a little bit. So you can borrow that one, racially pre-approved. That's on the list of acceptable terms in 2025 now. Every time you hear somebody talk about, I'm doing my best to address the problem of the unhoused in this community, I'm like, oh, I'm glad that you don't have to worry about that because you've got your stamp of racial pre-approval. Hit them with that shit and they'll be like, I don't like that. I'm like, I don't either. I don't like the thing you said. Let's talk about that. That'll be a lot of fun. Have some fun with it. You know who's not having any fun? Shit balls. The Jags, the Bears, the Steelers, all three of them lost this week. Ugh. Oh my God. This was a rough fucking week for the home teams, man. Jaguars versus Cincinnati. The score of that game does not reflect the apathetic attitude that came off of the Cardiac Cats at the end of the fucking third quarter into the fourth quarter. Again, they did the thing that I was hoping they wouldn't do. They built up the score enough, and then they started to like they did this thing where they had kind of, it's weird. They built up the score slowly, step by step, which is kind of what you want to do. But then when they had moments to ratchet it up, they'd either commit some kind of penalty that would cost them yards, or there would be an turn over the ball because of an interception or something like that. And while the score was tight, it's a 4-point spread, 31-27 in favor of the Cincinnati Bengals. Jacksonville looked better than they have in years, despite the loss. It looked like they were kind of finding a little bit more of a step, finding a more measured process into how they approach the overall strategy of the game's offense and even the defense, and it seemed to be more manageable. The Chicago Bears, on the other hand, I couldn't even see the game, which was probably for the best because they got eaten alive by the Detroit Lions, 52-21. We really got to institute a slaughter rule in football. Like, once you get over, like, you know, once you get to a certain time in the game and you hit, like, a certain point, be like, this is enough. Even if you hit, like, we should do that. If you hit 50 points in the game and the other team is only, like, if they're, like, only at fucking 30, be like, that's a wrap. This is over. We're done. We're not watching this shit. Go home. It's clear that you're winning. Stop. It's just unfortunate. And like I said, I've tried to watch highlights. It just made me want to fucking scream. So I was like, I can't watch this shit. It's really unfortunate, too, because Chicago had a very solid showing in the preseason. So you know that their second and third stringers at least have a shot. Maybe it is only against other second and third stringers. But it's very disheartening to think that we might have to wait until, you know, midway through the season before any of those people start to get any serious play time, which at that point, it'll be almost too late. Before it's, you know, we're like, hey, you're not even in close to playoff contention. How many more you got to lose before you go like, hey, put some of the third stringers in there. Give them a shot. They were at least winning some games, you know? And as far as the Pittsburgh Steelers versus the Seahawks, Seahawks got them 31-17. Didn't see that game either. I'm going to have to probably go and watch some more this week. It's been tough trying to catch up with all the football because everything is on 8 different sites. And I bitched about this for shit, at least a year or so. But the real problem is you can't watch everything no matter how much you try because it's all on 18 different things. So good luck trying to find it in the first place. Let's take a look at the NFL real quick. See what we can prognosticate for this coming week. That's your vocabulary word for the week, as I failed to say vocabulary word. Prognosticate. Let's take a look here. All right. In the next week, we're going to have a really rough one watching these as well because there's going to be scattered all over the fucking place. We have the Bears versus the Cowboys. And I'm going to just call this as a Cowboys win just so I can get it out of the way. I don't know that they're going to win. I don't want them to win, but that's kind of how my heart feels right now. I'm kind of worried that that's what's going to be. The first part of the season for Chicago is just LLL. And then we have Jags versus Texans. I'm going to take the Texans on this one as well. I want to be wrong about these picks, but I just got a feeling that the Jaguars, well, they're not going to get beat the way Chicago got beat last week, you know, where they're down by like 30 points or whatever. I do have a feeling that Jacksonville isn't quite where they need to be to start taking down some teams and even like some mid-tier teams they're going to struggle with, you know? That's my guess. So I'm going to throw this one to the Texans this week. And then you got Steelers versus Patriots. And I'm going to say the Steelers take this one. No real information on this one, just kind of a feeling. That's the impression that I get. Anyway, that's my impression for the week. And yeah, let's see how it all shakes out this week. I don't know what's going to happen. I'm as confused and as mystified as everybody else. But good luck to everybody out there. Hopefully the Jags and Bears actually pull one out this week. That'd be great. And again, like I said, check the links in the podcast description if you want to hear more about this preacher that I was talking about and the message that he had where he talks about how he's overwhelmed. It's a very powerful sermon that he gives, and you want to watch it from start to finish. And then also the videos of the Nepalese protests, which are insane, by the way, and you should definitely be aware of them. Even if you don't, quote unquote, support political violence, you know what I mean? Remember that these are people who are also being driven to the brink of desperation. It's weird. It's like it's impressive to watch. It's impressive and scary the same way that the January 6th protests were. Except for these people are like, hey, this isn't what we the people wanted. And we literally have all been like, you're lying to us. Meanwhile, it was just like a handful of people who were just like, we just didn't like the fact that we lost. It was like the people of Nepal are like, we are being systematically disenfranchised and we have to do something about it. There's a very stark difference that we're looking at here. But anyway, I'm going to get out of here. Thank you guys so much thank you for listening to the podcast. Thank you for sharing, rating, subscribing, commenting, going to patreon.com for free. To send me emails. I want your emails. I want to read something from you guys. Comments, questions about anything on the pod, go to patreon.com/wanderingonestudios and then stop by twitch.tv/linkib to watch me play games, sometimes pretty well, sometimes really horribly. And it'll be hilarious no matter what. Yep. Thanks for sticking around. This is a long one, but it is definitely necessary. I love you guys. I can't wait to hear from you soon. Be good at it, and I'll catch you wanderers a little further on down the road. Peace.